Good afternoon, everybody. Or I guess if you're on the West Coast, it's still good morning to you. Or those of you that are overseas at the Open Championship, a good evening to you. It is the Open Championship week, and it is the PGA DFS Strategy Show with myself and Ben Raza. And Ben, might be your last show of the week. We're gonna let you go on maybe a little bit of a vacation, but I'm going to suck every minute that you've got left out of you here for the Strategy Show. And of course, Ben, sponsored by Monkey Knife Fight, and they've got a couple of props this week that I really like, especially for round one. We'll get into that in a second. But in case you haven't heard of Monkey Knife Fight before, they are player props based contests that don't require the time commitment or worrying about ownership, anything like that. And of course, we'll go over a couple of different contests that they have available. But if you head on over, use promo code AWESOMO, you're going to get $100 on your first deposit as a deposit match. And a couple of those dollars you can use on, Ben, we're going to talk right about Royal St. George's right off the top. And how every single player that I've listened to speak about it this week has said that it's soft right now. Expected to change by the weekend, but the area has got a ton of rain. So how I want to take advantage of that? Well, the line is set at 69.5 for round one scores. Bunch of great golfers there. I'm going to take the under on every single one of them, except for Rory McIlroy.
Oh, yeah, well, now, worse.
That's not to say that I don't like Rory McIlroy this week, but you and I were just talking about the fact that if he didn't have to play Thursdays, he might have already more majors than Jack Nicklaus, probably at least close to Tiger, but he does have to play Thursday. It's an actual documented thing. So do you want to join me in thinking this course, Royal St. George's, may be a little soft the first 2 days?
It's definitely possible. I think we've known this and everybody knows this. The wild card is going to be, the wind can neutralize it. If they can just get these wedges and short irons in their hands and they can attack these pins, there's going to be low scores. Guys are going to shoot 65 in that first day. I have no doubt about it. If it's windy, if it's 40-mile-an-hour winds, that could negate that. So I like what you're doing. I think we're going to talk a lot about today, grouping players who are in micro stacks, grouping strategies of how aggressive they can be. And then Royal St. George will try to punch back because that's what Lynx Golf is all about.
Sure is. Now, if you don't want to get caught up in the round one contest, like I said, they Monkey Knife Fight also offering a line of 13.5 birdies or 12.5 birdies for the overall tournament. A couple of names that are in there, Koepka, Thomas, and Spieth. I did mention to you a little bit before, it is a par 70, so, you know, birdies may be hard to come by, but if you go look into it, there's about four or five par fours that I think they could have wedge opportunities into. And of course, the two par fives, both reachable. So even though there are a lot of bogeys out there, I think there could be some birdies. I'm going to take the over on all of the guys I think are going to make the cut. That includes Koepka, Thomas, and Spieth. That's the one I ironed out. That's a 4X on that prop payout if you get all of them correct. So that is a couple of the props from Monkey Knife Fight. Thanks to them over there. A couple more things on Royal St. George's, Ben. It is a par 70, 7,200 yards. So do you think that this score is going to be hard to get to, say, 10 or 11 under just due to that fact?
Yeah, just due to that alone. I mean, is it possible? Yes, in the right conditions, because as we've talked about, I don't think some of the courses over there, most of the courses over there are built on defense that the elements need. You know, in theory, you could destroy this course. I doubt we see that. I think the birdie number will be higher. It's the problem of, can you avoid, will the winner have a couple doubles? I don't think that's unrealistic at all to think that everyone in the field is going to catch a fescue lot, even off some good shots. Like, yep, there's a lot of randomness in this course, in these fairways. So I think it's more about, can you limit the mistakes than can you actually make birdies?
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before during majors. I love to consume content. I love to listen to all the golfers talk about it. You know, there's a lot of different questions asked. I mean, we learned something about Jon Rahm today that most of us didn't know. You know, he was born with like a clubbed foot. That's why he can only go as far back on his backswing as he can, because his ankle mobility is limited. I mean, I would have never known that, but, you know, a lady pressed him about it. He answered it, and it was, you know, cool to hear. Then I heard Bryson said he wants to play with Brooks at the Ryder Cup. I don't know if that's going to happen, because Brooks said the exact opposite. But with all that being said, one of the most common themes among all of these interviews was, I thought I hit a great drive and the ball ended up in the rough. That's even with the fairways being as soft as they are right now from all the rain. So that's going to happen a lot. Now, do you think that that hurts somebody like Bryson DeChambeau, who is so scientific, expects when he hits a shot, it to land exactly where it's supposed to? I think somebody with a temperament like him gets offended in a way by that.
So I think that's the big mystery. So far with Bryson, he's had no success at Opens. Is that just that he needs to dial it in and kind of figure out? I think there is some truth to that. I think he's a wild card with upside, but I've preached for a while, and I think you're kind of on this. The biggest problem with Bryson at times is when it gets off track, he's unable to correct it mid-round. And we've seen that result in he's going along and he makes a 10, or he's going along and at the US Open, it gets off track and it melts down to a degree that takes him out of the tournament. I worry about that, but I certainly don't worry about, you know, Bryson being able at times to go crazy low. I think in showdowns, first round leader type things, Bryson makes a lot of sense. Just don't know 72 holes, how much risk reward you want to incur.
Yeah, especially at 9,900, you know, we're not getting, you know, too much of a discount. I know at Carnoustie, there's that viral meme of him kind of on the back of the driving range, kind of crying or looking visibly upset. That stuff can happen at the Open Championship. You're going to hit a good golf shot and it's not going to go where you're supposed to. You're going to have to pitch out. You may not be able to get out of the bunker in one. These type of things happen. And a lot of the reasons is because you have to deal with elements outside of the actual golf course. You have to deal with the wind elements, the weather elements. Bryson said in his press conference, he really struggles in that department. So certainly something he has to learn. All right, let's talk about a couple of other things dealing with the Open Championship. But before we do, let's talk about a couple of free premium tools and data we have going on today. For MLB, player projections are free. And for PGA, Top Golfers, a great tool. Go on and check that out. One of the many awesome premium tools we have behind the curtain. And we'll go into a little bit about those a little later. But Ben, this week, 16 withdraws at the Open Championship.
Wild.
Huge names, too. Matsuyama had to withdraw. Bubba Watson, Sung Jae Im. Anything to note there? Do you expect any more? Or you think we're past the wave? Obviously, anything can happen. Right?
Yeah. I hope we're past it. I mean, it certainly has changed some of, you know, Decky's firmly in play. And some of those other guys were definitely reasonable targets. Hopefully we got the news kind of, I do think having to go across, obviously, you know, to Europe, it helps a little bit because if you make it there and everything's good, you would think for the most part, you're good to go. It's more early in the week that we're going to get this news. We got to keep an eye on it. The other good thing tomorrow night, you guys, because I won't be there, but your show will be only a couple hours before lock. So the news, there's not going to be that big of a gap between, you know, getting you guys the information out there and when the tournament actually locks.
Yeah, very true. Tee times came out this morning. Looks like 6:35 local time, I think, is when they're going on. I think that's what I saw. That gives us 1:35 in the morning. Yep. Here. I think that's when it's going to be. So we'll be, you know, pretty darn close as you can get to having people still be awake. Of course, I'll still be awake. All right, let's go on to talk about some royal winners here. And of course, I like to do our segments here with a little bit of touch to the golf course or the tournament that we're playing in. Above 9,000 this week, that's kind of the area we're going to focus on for DraftKings. It's only three golfers that have won an Open Championship: Jordan Spieth, Louis Oosthuizen, and Rory McIlroy. Let's talk about McIlroy. I gave you a very interesting stat before we came on that after a miscut, he's actually played quite well. In fact, after a miscut, he's won three times. And most recently, he's come in the top 10 eight of nine times after a miscut. So, Ben, do you want to buy into Rory McIlroy being able to turn it around on a dime? And is he a golfer that you would pick above everybody else to do exactly that?
So, you know, when I initially got into the week, I was kind of neutral on Rory. And then, shocker, I know it's me, I'm starting to kind of gravitate towards him. And yeah, he wasn't good in Scotland, but he wasn't terrible either. You just mentioned, I think, something that's very relevant, that Rory, he can find his game quickly. He knows who he is. Obviously, Rahm is the favorite. He should be the favorite. He's also double the projected ownership that we have right now. So you're getting a major discount if you want to go to Rory. You got a slight savings as well. I feel good about it. He's got a good open record. He can do it. He's got to avoid some of the mistakes. It's not to say that I'm targeting Rory and nobody else, because that is not true. But Rory makes a lot of sense. I'm not worried about the slip up at the Scottish.
Talk about Louis Oosthuizen next, then we can chat a little bit about Spieth. Louis has done everything but win recently. They got him priced correctly this time. We don't get the discount of 8,000. So we shouldn't have to worry about ownership all that too much at 9,300, Ben. So is he going to be a focal point of your lineups, or do you think that this would be a time to get off of him given his price?
It's scary because I keep saying how many times in a row can this guy continue to gain strokes putting?
And again,
I mean, I've never seen anything like this. He gained another 7 at the US Open. He hasn't lost strokes putting since on the PGA Tour. We have strokes gained data. Louis has not lost strokes gained putting since August of 2020. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's unheard of.
It really is. The best putter in the world.
He absolutely is the best putter in the world right now. And that is just so shocking. But this is also a guy that has a great, you know, he's a winner at St. Andrews. He's a runner up at the Open as he is everywhere else. I like it. I will say though, a lot of the value with Usti is normally he's 3% owned. No one is on him and he comes out of nowhere. This is the opposite of that. He's priced to the premium. People like him. So it's a different kind of build with him. I don't think I'm nearly as high as I normally am on a guy like Oost.
Yeah, I think it's the combination of everybody liking him plus the premium price, right? Yep. Last time, you know, at when he was 8,000, 20% owned, he got it done, you know, came in second place. This week, it's both those. 8,000 is a value opportunity there. This, you don't have a value. If you put Oost Hazen in, realistically speaking, you can really only get, say, Spieth and one other guy in the 8,000 or going up to Rahm or Rory. You can really only get one of those guys in with Usti, which is different. Now, let's talk about Spieth, the other winner of an Open Championship in this range. In fact, if you look at the Open, this is probably his second best major. 7 for 7 in cuts made, never missed one. 3 top 10s, including the win. It's just his style of golf. It is such a reliance on short game and being able to make par or make a bogey out of literally the driving range or wherever it may be. 9,700 and possibly the most popular player on the slate. Ben, are you chasing it? I think it's no question. I obviously am.
I think he's going to be the most popular player on the slate. I think that's probably warranted. And I'll go as far as to say, I think long-term, when we look back on everything, that the Open will be Spieth's best. I think this suits his game better than Augusta, honestly. It's just built for the way he plays. He's the opposite of Bryson in so many ways, where he's creative, he's artistic, and Bryson's very robotic at times. And I think for the Open, you know, Spieth is able to work out of those crazy bounces and do, you know, shape shots and do things like that. The strokes gain data is ridiculous. He's gained strokes across the board in all four categories in 3 straight tournaments, in 5 of 6. Everything is clicking for him. He's going to be very popular, though, and I get that. He's the guy that I mention this all the time. You could start with him, but he also could be your second man in, so you get a double dip in ownership. Yep. I still like him, though. I think JT is very interesting as well, so you have options, but Spieth is checking all the boxes.
He really is. I've got JT kind of slotted in with DJ and Koepka next, but let's talk about JT since you brought him up. The crutch undeniably has been his putter this year.
Yes.
So a nice piece of fact. He threw in a new shaft, not a new putter, a new shaft to the putter that he won, you know, the PGA Championship with at Wells Fargo. And results seemed to almost click instantly. Last week at the Scottish Open, he gained just about a stroke, but also gained a lot around the green, which here, over here, Scottish Open, here this week at the Open, a lot of the times it's using a putter, keeping the ball on the ground. So given those stats, we know ball striking has not been a problem for him. Are you more inclined, given the price discount, to go him and Spieth to start your lineup?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you talked right at the beginning, if it is in fact very soft conditions, I think JT might be one of, if not my favorite play. This guy is unstoppable with short irons. Now he's got to convert the putts, as you mentioned, but I absolutely love his abilities on the approach game if this is target practice. So he makes a lot of sense. He's very reasonably priced. I think he's going to be reasonably owned. What can, even in the betting market, he's north of 20-1 at some places. I think that's a very appealing outright tag.
I do too. It's kind of hard to start with, you know, anybody else, especially in the betting market at 20-1, you're getting both Thomas. Spieth is really close to that number as well. So yeah, I totally agree. Now let's talk about Koepka. Watched his interview. It was good. It was actually enjoyable to watch. He answered all the questions that were asked of him in pretty good detail. And he was very honest. He said he doesn't really like this golf course at all. He said that it's one of his least favorite on the rotation. Said next year is his absolute most favorite place to play in the world, St. Andrews. So just keep a note on that. But he said it shouldn't affect him playing well. He still expects to play well here. It's just that he said he doesn't like blind tee shots or blind shots into the green. He likes to see where it's going. Do you believe him that it doesn't impact his play, number one? And number two, do you think you need to play him given his price tag of, I believe, 10,700 this week on DraftKings.
Definitely don't think you need to play him. Listen, Brooks has shown for a long time now that when the lights shine the brightest, he comes to play. He's a good links player. We've seen that. He's got a lot of experience over there. He went that route very early in his career, and I think that helps you at the Open. But you're talking about him versus Rory, him versus Rahm, him plus $1,000 versus guys like Spieth and JT. That's where it gets a little tricky. My plan with a guy like Brooks, I don't know honestly if I'm going to be able to do this, would be to cancel him, come in around the field. I don't think I'm going to get major leverage over. I don't want to devote, you know, 1/5 of my portfolio to a guy like Brooks this week. It's tricky though. He shows up and we saw it at the US Open. We saw it at the PGA. I still think there are better options ultimately than Brooks Koepka though.
One of them could be Dustin Johnson. He is $300 cheaper, but his best performance at an Open was 10 years ago at this exact golf course where he came runner up in that event. That was with an out of bounds on one of the last days. I mean, obviously very young in Dustin Johnson's career, but why do you think he's struggled kind of since then? Nothing what we would expect from DJ in terms of finishes. I mean, I know he's only won, what, two majors now. The Open hasn't even been really close since 2011.
No, it doesn't seem, I don't want to say it doesn't seem to fit his game, because I don't believe that DJ is good enough to win anywhere, but at the same time, maybe it's just adverse conditions. He's another one that I think if it's really nasty, I don't know if that's the best thing for DJ. 25-1 in the outright market, I don't mind just blindly backing that, I will say. But for DFS purposes, even though he's going to be lower owned than some of these guys, it's not going to be enough when you have Rory, when you have Xander, who makes a ton of sense, and certainly the guys we've already talked about.
Yeah, no doubt. So one last thing before we get to Xander, on Bryson. I put out a tweet that said, listen, he's playing with Spieth, he's playing with Brandon Grace. Obviously, in my opinion, for Bryson DeChambeau right now, there is not a better golfer for him to be paired up with than Jordan Spieth. He's friends with him. They've made it clear that they're friendly. And because Spieth is a huge name, the attention may come off of the Brooksy chance, if you will, especially if Spieth is in the lineup. So all that being said, with expected conditions of wind being in the 20 to 30 mile an hour range, do you see value in the missed cut equity department from Bryson DeChambeau?
I mean, I think this is a tournament. It's different than the US Open, but you see all the time, big names are going to miss this cut. I will say it's slightly easier to make. This is top 70 in ties, which helps a little. But the difference, and I said this yesterday, but I want to repeat it. At the Masters, you have former champions, guys that are very, very old that get to play.
Yep.
The PGA, you have 25 guys that realistically have no chance, the PGA pros.
No chance.
The US Open, it's open qualifying. You get a lot of guys that really have no chance. This is the one tournament. The bottom of this, these guys can play. I know they're not PGA Tour level players, but
yeah,
they've got experience.
20 of them but a lot of them are good, though.
Good players. They are more experienced in links golf than our guys in a lot of regard. I don't think it's a shoe. You know, you're going to see more guys from the lower sixes make the cut. And that reason, to circle back, I think is why any of the guys up top, if you have a couple bad holes, it could be bye-bye pretty quickly.
Yep, it sure can. Okay, let's talk about Xander. He's ditching the arm lock method in his putting. It was an experiment that lasted a couple of rounds. He did okay with it. Do you think, however, that this signifies a greater problem in Xander Schauffele's mental capacity with his putter that is preventing him from winning? And if that's the case, is he really going to break at an Open Championship?
Yeah, I do worry about guys trying to find any part of their game at an Open Championship. I think that's a dangerous game, but I'm hoping his ball striking is ridiculous. We know that he can play. I'm kind of indifferent. I never get Xander right, let's be honest. So no matter what I say, it's just not going to work. But flat 10, I think he's a fair price. Spieth is, and JT to me are a little more obvious, but I'm hoping that Xander's formula to me is hold it together with the putter and just lean on your irons, because when he gets going, he's improved his around the green. He's a four tool player, for lack of a better term.
He's kind of the newer Louis Oosthuizen generation. He's competed, I think, almost at every major, maybe not the PGA, but I know he competed at the US Open that one year. I know he was second at the Masters and second at the Open Championship a couple of years ago as well. So Xander can certainly get it done. I just think at 10,000 for me, I think he's going to come in around the ownership of Rahm and Spieth, maybe even higher than JT. I think I'd rather just dip down. I'm taking the fade on Xander in part of my top five videos. He is my number one fade for that reason. Another reason, I just think that I would rather pay 400 and get DJ, or I'd rather pay 900 and get McElroy in my lineup. I feel more comfortable there. Given that we haven't seen them really messed with their putting grip, although DJ changes his putter every single day. That's kind of standard for him. We haven't seen Xander do it at all. So, all right, let's move down and talk about a couple of other golfers in this range before we move on to some sandwich values. And the guy I want to talk about is Colin Morikawa. Last week was his first time on Lynx Golf. That really kind of struck me, Ben. He said he struggled to get firm contact because of how different it is hitting off of these fairways. We know Morikawa relies on his iron game. So does that make you have to fade him this week? No matter how good he really is, clearly it was a problem last week at Scottish Open.
I do worry. He's someone that I have in a specific bucket. If it plays really soft, I think that Colin Morikawa then is certainly playable because he can just go right at these flags. And his iron game is better than anyone in the entire world. I worry, though, if it's not that, what's going to happen? And, you know, his putting at times has been really suspect. You just mentioned kind of his comments after the Scottish. I think he's someone that realistically, you know, they're all great players. I'm not nearly as high on him as maybe some other people are.
Yeah. And listen, I'm definitely maybe one of the OG Colin Morikawa supporters. We haven't seen him in an open, and an open test all parts of the game, including mental. And we don't have a mental strokes gain category. But I don't know where I stand with Colin Morikawa in that department. I would rather play either Patrick, and we'll talk about them here in a second. But before we do that, I want to, of course, make sure everybody knows that one of the best ways to learn about all the free premium giveaways that we have over here at Awesome is to like and subscribe to our channel. There's a little bell right up on the top of the YouTube channel. You can go on and hit that. And, of course, check out all of the free tools. I already mentioned the top golfers tool that we have going on. And if you want to join us on the Osmo Plus side, want to try out all of the sports we have to offer, use the promo code PGA DFS Strategy Show. That's all capitals. And you'll get 20% off. I'm telling you, oh, it's actually PGA Strategy Show, right? Thank you.
There you go. Sorry. It's on the screen. Look,
it's on the screen. I'm just, I gotta, you know, I'm one of those guys that like, what's that? The movie with Will Ferrell, you put something on the teleprompter, which I did, Anchorman. I wrote it. Yeah, Anchorman, I got you. And I'm going to read it. Yeah, I love that movie, by the way. I was just having a little
40s. That's a great movie.
In any case, all right, let's move on to some sandwich values here. Reed and Cantlay, I just kind of teased you right off the top. I think that I have no problem clicking either of those guys. They've both shown the ability to perform in the open and both have every part of their game that I'd want here this week.
Well said. Patrick Reed, I honestly think, has underperformed in opens given how good his game is in the Spieth kind of bucket of likes tough conditions, can work in some, you know, nasty rain, wind, he doesn't care. You know, he's had some top tens, and but he's never really been in the hunt, and I think that could change. Your boy, Patrick Cantlay, is one of my favorite plays, but even more than that, he's my favorite bet on the board. He's 33-1 to win as a great number. He's got everything that I want. Good player, well-rounded, got experience. He just won at Memorial. I know he wouldn't have if Rahm didn't withdraw, but he would have come in probably second, and that's a really good showing. Mm-hmm. Form is good. Yeah. Patrick Cantlay, to me, is a very, very solid target, and to see 33-1, I was a little surprised. I thought that would be in the mid-20s.
Cheapest price on DraftKings, I believe, this week, in my opinion. I know there's the Sam Burns at 6,300, but to get the layer, the player ability of Patrick Cantlay for 8,900, I think it's a steal. I think that if Paul Casey was in perfect physical form, and he may be this week, we haven't seen his interview yet. I think he is scheduled for one of the next 2 days. I think he's another one that at 8,600, Ben, that you can really rely on. Again, I would like to hear him say that, yeah, my back spasms have stopped, but we won't get that. So are you with me? Again, Hideki withdrawing kind of makes this area a little bit easier for me. I don't have to worry about Decky. I can just go get Cantlay and Reed secondary.
Yeah, I'm with you. One other guy I want to mention, And he's a tough one. He has not shown up nearly as good in majors as he should as Ty Hatton. He is as good a links player as you're going to find. He's got a serious resume at Alfred Dunhill and other big-time tournaments. I think he's obviously more comfortable over here. He has not shown up in majors relative to how good he's played, but I'm going to still think that, you know, long-term, this is a guy that can contend, particularly in opens. This is tailor-made for his skill set.
Yeah, and listen, I totally agree about Hatton. If he has played well at one major, it's been this one. He has two top tens, but all the other ones have been garbage, and all the other ones recently have been garbage. The last top 10 that he had was at Portrush. So I think there is something to be said, but given that he just hasn't played as well as Patrick Cantlay, I can't get myself to play him. The other guy that we didn't mention is Victor Hovland. He's another guy that he's going to need to prove it to me in an open championship for me to play him at 9,100. This will be his first time we've seen him. I know he's from Norway, but that doesn't mean he's from England or Ireland or Scotland, where you're going to play many of these style of courses. So for me, I'm going to wait and see with Hovland. I would rather go up and just get Oosthuizen.
Hovland's always a tricky one for me. He's an incredible player. I'm more with you than not, though. I don't know. It's just sheer opportunity cost. I like the other guys a little more right now. I may look to him if I go very aggressive, say like take Rory and some of these other big time drivers of the ball. Because we know that if Hovland's really going to be effective, he's going to shave down these holes. He's going to be, you know, dominating off the tee. He's not going to win in a technical chipping contest against guys like Spieth, Reed, even Cantlay to an extent.
So before we move on to a couple of other guys, I wanted to ask you a question. So we've got this scenario here where on our Osmo points projection side, which has been spot on lately, this week I have a little deterrence from. And it tends to happen with this one golfer, but I think there's a couple of other scenarios. In a situation like this, where both you and I, Ben, seem to like Jordan Spieth quite a bit, for me, he's probably one of my top plays on the board. But given his price and given his total points projected as Osmo, we only have him projected at 50 points, which is basically like 13th or 14th on the board, not fifth. So in a situation like that, what do you do when the numbers or projections say one thing, but our minds seem to be telling us another?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the most interesting parts about golf is that, you know, you can analyze this and arrive at slightly different conclusions. But in the end, what we're trying to do here is build a golf lineup of six golfers. And there are definitely scenarios, not that I'm saying I'm going to roster Spieth and hope that he comes in like 16th, but in a tournament like this, where win equity is so distributed up and down the ranges, his stability to me and his median projection, I think really helps in a lot of circumstances. Cause I really do think Spieth is one of the safest plays on the board. And I know safe is a relative term in golf because anybody can go out and miss a cut. But I think more often than not, Spieth will at least give you the opportunity for your other five golfers to perform. And if you have a guy in the sevens or even the sixes that comes in third that contends, well, now that takes the pressure off your top guy in Spieth. And I think that's where you can still use the projections kind of in other ways. And then you have slight tweaks. Like I think you and me are higher on him than maybe the board is, but that doesn't mean that he still can't be effective. And at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can come underweight if you're looking to kind of move and pivot in that same range.
And I'm going to give you the exact opposite side now. Webb Simpson is clearly not 100%, missing the cut last time out at a scoring event that everybody kind of seemed to line up. I've been the champion of don't play Webb since that withdrawal at his home event. Don't play him. There's something wrong with him. But the projections may not have caught up to that yet. So do you want to write off Webb Simpson this week like I am again, or do you want to try and trust the projections one more time?
Yeah, it's very difficult with stuff like that because it's impossible to quantify. If he's in the field, you know, you assume that
he's healthy.
Yeah, you do. And he has shown at times, you know, it's funny. Let's click into Webb for a second. I was a little alarmed, no big deal. He comes in 30th at the PGA. He misses the cut at the US Open. Not good, but I think a US Open and Webb don't mix at all. My most disturbing thing was that he missed the cut at Rocket Mortgage and he was terrible. And that to me was really disappointing. I know it's a stupid tournament in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it's such a weak field. I'm not sure I'm going to get to much. I think I would roll the dice with Finau and Scheffler, honestly, even Adam Scott in that same range before I got to Webb.
And as I've said kind of a few times now, Zalatoris can hit the ball further than Simpson, but modeled this game after him. I think it's a mini Webb Simpson in a lot of ways. You know, went to Wake Forest, same putting stance, same iron play. Also not playing great golf. 8,500 still. He's performed in every single test he's been given, but this will be his first Open Championship. So it sounds like, let me put him up with Scottie Scheffler, who's also in his first Open, also played extremely well in the rest of his majors. Sorry, Zalatoris missed the cut at the Open, the U.S. Open. I should have said that. Zalatoris, Scheffler. I'm assuming you're going to lean Scheffler here. Is it strictly due to price, or do you think Scheffler's actually a better player as well?
I think it's a
little... Or I could be wrong. I could be wrong totally. You could be going Zalatoris.
No, I am going Scheffler. It's tough, though, because I think society, as I call it, also goes Scheffler. He's going to be a lot higher owned than we'll see this week.
Yeah.
I trust this game a little more. We don't know still with Will Z, is no experience, which I do think is a negative, but you know what? How many times have we said that with this guy that, oh, he hasn't done this and then he does it. Obviously he can contend in majors. We know that now. I still think I'm a little cool on him in the board. It's such a different thing. I really believe more than anything with Lynx golf, you have to not play well, but you just got to get reps. It's really tough to come over, and Scheffler is, you know, to an extent similar in this regard. And that's why I would prefer guys with more experience. It's tough to go over there and handle yourself if you've really never seen what this could entail.
Yeah. Let me give you a group of six then of kind of guys that we're talking about. And maybe you don't want to play any of them, but Zalatoris, Scheffler, Finau, Simpson, kind of all guys on those mid eight range, or would you rather just kind of skip all those, take your shot with say Justin Rose or Adam Scott, or even dip even lower to the reigning Open champion, Shane Lowry at 7,900. And right there also at 7,900 is Matt Fitzpatrick coming off a second place at the Scottish, you know, should have won. I mean, a lot of people have said to me that I wasn't watching the playoff, but a lot of people said that Fitzpatrick should have won it at some point. So given that, do we just skip the mid eights altogether?
I don't know if you need to write them off completely. I will say I'm not nearly as high on them as maybe, you know, the field is going to be. And I think this is an opportunity to get some savings. It's just very difficult. These guys cause problems. These English guys, Fleetwood is a difficult build.
Fitzy is
like Hatton. He is one top 10 in a major. That's not good enough for a guy this good. I do like him this week, but it is a little tricky. Justin Rose, I have to ask you. I mean, the guy putts out of his mind in majors only, apparently. I don't know if I can do it. He has the profile. Older guys tend, you know, this is a tournament we see time and time again, veteran players excel at. I don't know if I can click Rose's name, though.
Over the last 2 years, we've seen a total transition in Justin Rose's game from a quality ball striker, a decent driver of the ball, really good iron player, to a guy that heavily relies on his putter and his short game to get it done. I think that the long, tough golf courses like Torrey Pines will be a continued struggle for Justin Rose the rest of his career. This is not Torrey Pines. This is 500 yards shorter, 600 yards shorter, even on most days. It's going to require craftiness on and around the greens. Do I like him for a top 10? No, I don't think so. But I would rather play him or Tommy Fleetwood over Zalatoris or Simpson. That's for sure. Probably even over Tony Finau. I think Tony Finau is a little bit lost on the golf course right now from what we've been seeing. So for me, I'd rather play either of those guys. For Fleetwood, I thought it was really interesting. He said that out of all the rotations of courses that the Open Championship uses, there's probably only one that he would have not been the hometown favorite and rooting for on a Sunday. And it was at Portrush, where he happened to be in the final group with Shane Lowry. So a little bit unfortunate for him, but he does get up for Opens. There's no doubt about it. So do you think that 8,000 is going to scare enough people off where maybe it is a good leverage spot this week for Tommy Fleetwood?
I definitely think that these are really good. You know, we're talking about multiple millie makers out there. These are the type of plays that can make it because these guys can win tournaments, that can hang in. You're not going to have serious ownership. I think I'm going to throw Adam Scott in the same mix.
Yeah, same bucket. Yep.
I think that he's putting unbelievably. And if he can correct his ball striking, which long-term is ridiculous, he's got a good Open resume. He can absolutely contend here. He knows what he's doing. I don't know. Cash, I think all these guys are probably passes. But in tournaments, pairing them up as your third or even fourth guy in is a fantastic move, in my opinion.
Absolutely agree. Lowry and Fitzpatrick, we already talked about. I think you and I both agree, going to be very, very highly owned and popular. Both are playing well. both are perceived to be good values. So it kind of leaves the Aussies that are up next as a little lower owned, maybe pivot plays. Do you like Cam Smith or Mark Leishman over Fitzpatrick or Lowry, or even more so than Adam Scott, their other countrymate? Or I'll throw the fourth one out there, Buzz Lightyear himself, Jason Day.
I knew it was coming. I swear to God. So I'm not going to go on a tangent, but I will say I was watching some old videos of ours last night from shows in 2019, and the British Open with him in 2019, where he bogeyed 5 or 6 holes in a row to miss that cut on the number. It still stings. I swore I would never go back, but he has flipped the putter a little bit, and that is why we see a 10th and a 14th in his past couple of tournaments. Like Paul Casey, if he said, "I feel great, I feel healthy," I probably get there. I'm just so nervous about where he's at. I think he's going to be in the pool just because he's going to be very low owned. But it's hard to trust him. I mean, he's time and time again, like Ricky, he just burns you.
I would say this, if you're going to play Paul Casey at 8,600, play Jason Day at 7,600 as well, because you're not playing them for the same reasons, and you should be playing them also for the same reasons, in my opinion. Day has looked pretty good when he's actually decided to play all 4 rounds, or, you know, not been hurt or whatever. We know he's got back problems, but honestly, you can't dislike him in this spot. So, okay, a couple of other guys that I want to talk about. Joaquin Niemi. People are going to love this guy. Coming off a second place finish at the Rocket Mortgage. Guy's only 22 years old. It'll be his, I believe, his second or third Open. Results have been terrible. And I think you and I both know why. The weakness in his game is around the green and the inability to save par when he needs to. And it really hurts him in this tournament. And I think it will again. I don't think he's ready for this tournament specifically. I would rather take the way under on the 15 to 20% projected.
Biggest issue I have is the ownership. I think Niemann is a guy that is underrated in general. I think he's going to be extremely good for a very long time.
Me too. Yep.
He's starting to get it with majors little by little. This one is the last one to come, though, because this is completely opposite of everything that he does well, which is tear apart a course where it's score, 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 like Rocket Mortgage. This is not that. I like Niemann in life. I just don't see how you lean on a guy, especially if it looks like it's going to be windy. This is a good to miss the cut bet, I think, because this guy around the green is just not there yet. I love his scoring. I think he's live to outscore his placement points if he can get through the cut, but he's a serious, serious risk when you look to roster guys. I would much rather play Answer and some of these guys with more experience.
Since their Masters win, Dustin Johnson and Sergio Garcia have both been dreadful at majors. Now, Dustin, obviously, a little bit more recently. Sergio finally made a cut at the U.S. Open. Prior to 2018, his Open championship record was actually his best major. So does that make you buy into Sergio Garcia this week, or have we just not seen enough to get there?
I mean, once you say that you might play Jason Day, you can really sink to any depth. Sergio's ball striking, listen, it always puts him in the conversation. His putting is abysmal. But at the same time, I still think that these guys that have been in so many adverse, you know, he's played the Open for a decade. He knows what he's doing. Different type of build. I think he's more in the Hovland bucket than the Spieth bucket and the Reed bucket. But I have some use for him at 7,600. I think he's a fine price. You just worry about the short game, because when he doesn't putt, he's virtually unrosterable.
A guy that really just doesn't putt barely ever, and if he could, maybe he would have a PGA Tour victory. Same price as Sergio Abraham. Answer, do you like him here? Listen, Akiwa, which I would say would play a little bit more like this, certainly than the U.S. Open did. He came through on Sunday with one of the best rounds of the week. So Abraham Answer, 7,600. I wrote down on our pre-notes that it's an interesting debate, because I'm not sure what to do with him. 7,600 seems reasonable, but I don't know if this is a good spot for him. I would think it would be. I'm really not sure. Take it away.
It's a tough one. I'll say this. So this guy, he's only played a couple Opens and it has not gone well. Yeah. I think unlike Niemann, he's much more primed to make a leap. Does that mean he's going to contend? Probably not. Yeah. But making his first, you know, British Open cut, I think is more than, you know, doable here. The form has been great. He's accurate off the tee. His game is much better than he has been when he played in 2018 and 2019. And he's putting. He's gained strokes putting in 5 of 6. So I have no problem with Anser. I think he's a pretty solid target in the mid sevens.
Couple of other targets that you could use in the mid sevens are the ageless wonder duo, Phil Mickelson and Lee Westwood, 150, 148, having their best seasons in certainly 5, maybe even 10 years. Can you play either of these guys this week? And is this one of the last chances for Lee Westwood to change his career?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Lee Westwood get one. And I think we... realistically, that's probably unlikely at this point. But you know what? I never would have thought he could compete at the Players, and he's shown it. And I like Lee Westwood. And this is the, I think you would agree, this is the one major where some of the guys maybe on the back end of their careers can hang in a little bit more because it's more technical than brute strength of a US Open, you know, things of that nature. So I don't mind Westwood. I don't think he's a priority for me. Probably will try to get up to some of the guys we already talked about. And then I cannot wait to ask you, when I saw the pricing, you're the first person I thought of, Daniel Berger at 7,400. Is that enough to entice you? I know you're not the biggest Berger guy, but man, that is a pretty cheap price tag.
He played like he was 7,400 at the John Deere Classic last week. So for me, it's an easy fade again. I hope everybody loves it. Jump on Daniel Berger, everybody. Go ahead and play them. Listen, in the PGA DFS realm, we do compete against each other. So sure, go ahead and play Daniel Berger, everybody, if you'd like to. I would much rather play. And this is the notes that I have on here. Loaded at 7,300, 7,200, and 6,800. I can give you 15 names right there on those prices that I'd rather play over Daniel Berger. One of them being Harris English. I would rather play English over Berger. I would rather play Brandon Grace over Berger. Are there anybody in this range? In fact, I'd even rather play Ricky Fowler over Danny Berger right now.
That's my line.
Maybe that last line is a little stolen from you, but are there any other guys that you would like to play over Danny Berger this week?
So I definitely like Berger more than you, but he's going to be really, really popular. Brandon Grace is the guy that I've kind of zeroed in on. I think that he's built for this. We've seen it time and time again. Majors, difficult conditions, keeps the ball low, link style, checks all the boxes. I'm going to hang out with Russell Henley. I know he's not known for someone, but you know, for opens, but he hung in there nicely at the US Open. I know he fell a little on Sunday, but still just to be in contention. He's gained 3 straight with the approach, 3 straight with the putter. This is the type of guy, when I look at, you know, our one of my favorite tools, our unofficial world golf rankings, Russell Henley always stands out as a guy that's undervalued by the public. And I think that Alex and you and the whole team have done a great job in kind of alluding to some of these guys that on a macro level you can buy into. I might have some Henley shares this week in some key things, and I think that he's a reasonable, risky, but reasonable target.
I know he's not nearly as good of a putter as Jordan Spieth, and I'm never going to say that, but Russell Henley reminds me of a little Jordan Spieth type of game. He's not good off the tee, but everywhere else, he's really solid when he gets his putter going, and his putter has been going of late. So for me, I like pairing Henley and Spieth up. I think they bring a lot of the same qualities to the table, being able to go around. So I do like Henley in this range. A couple of other guys that I want to ask you about. Ian Poulter missed the cut here in 2011. I'm sure you're going to write that off. Recent form is incredibly good. So at 7,200, I know the Open Championship form is not as good as people would think, even with that missed cut in 2011. It's just not been that great. So is this a place for him to bust out and put his recent form to good use, or was the Scottish Open the climax of this recent time?
Probably more that the Scottish Open was kind of the pinnacle and whatnot. But I mean, Ian Poulter is someone that he's very crafty. Again, he fits a lot of what we want. I think it's obvious. I mean, he's English. He's got links experience more than most. But I still think that the guys we talked about probably fit a little more. I do want to say, though, not to transition the show too much.
Yeah.
We have a special guest in chat, Dave Lochran. Lofty has made it into the golf streets. Good to see our friend there. And I do want to say, Dave, while he's here, on, You may have not been seeing him a ton because he is in the lab doing a ton of fantasy football content. And if you don't know, one of our big announcements here is that we have a new YouTube channel that is focused exclusively on fantasy football, the Awesomeo Fantasy Football channel. You can just search Awesomeo Fantasy Football channel, come right up. Subscribe over there too. I know people obviously are in the golf streets and the MLB streets sweating the All-Star game and whatnot. But these drafts are coming fast and furious, whether it's best ball, season-long, dynasty, and there is a ton of content that we are doing. We're getting the edges on some of these big-time players over there. There's been some awesome videos already by Lofi and Matt and the whole team. So get on over there and take advantage of that because the season is going to be here. It's less than a couple months. It's crazy how fast football is approaching. So definitely wanted to get that out there to the golf streets because I know you're all be, you know, sweating football soon enough.
Yeah, next couple of weeks there'll be camp starting and
ridiculous
people reporting and getting injured and all that stuff. So yeah, absolutely check that out, Dave. Thanks for joining in. Another thing that I just saw in chat, we're in the range. Two golfers I want to bring up. First one is I saw in chat Bobby Mack. Let's talk about him. Guy hasn't missed a cut in a major since he started playing in them. Really good. Open Championship, came in the top 10 last year. He had a pretty good week last week. Here's where I'm using him: FanDuel, 8,500 versus, say, Fowler, same price on DraftKings as McIntyre. He's 92 on FanDuel. Harris English, same price as him on DraftKings, 9,400 on FanDuel. So that's where I'm using him. I'm just going to take that price difference and say, you know what? I like Fowler. I like English just as much. I'll use them on DraftKings. I'll use Bobby Mack on FanDuel. I get my exposure. Ben, you and I talk about that a lot, and this is one where I'm really going to use that price difference to my advantage.
We talk about it in betting all the time, you know, shopping for that value, getting the best line. It applies to DFS too. Like if you like a guy, obviously you can use them across sites, but why not take some of that? And sometimes the ownership doesn't travel with him. So totally in line with that. And I just think there's too many targets for me, you know, with Harris English, Ricky, I'm sure I'll have some shares. We've mentioned Grayson Henley, Noren is there. There's just a lot of guys in that same range. And I'm not sure that I'll have a ton of Bobby Mack on DraftKings. I think it's just too crowded.
5 euros that I want to ask you about. A couple of them are definitely surprised that they're priced in this range, but they're coming off of a win in a second place last week at the Scottish, that being Thomas Dietrich and Minwoo Lee. We also have Guido Migliozzi, who's on a run of form, Martin Keimer, who's on a run of form, and then lastly, Lucas Herbert, who is on maybe the best run of form of everybody. 5 euros, rank them 1 to 5 for me, Ben.
Man. Is it crazy if I say Lucas Herbert is my favorite? No, potentially?
I think that's totally fine.
I mean, this guy is playing serious golf right now, and I know his name has popped up a little bit, but I see it, and I think that these guys, you want to be careful with all of them. I don't think you're going to need a ton of ownership, but these guys can play, and even a guy, I believe he was a late add. Andy Sullivan is playing some good golf right now. I know he missed the cut at Scotland, 12th in the Irish Open, 5th at the BMW International, which is no joke. This guy's got open experience. He's a veteran of the tour. I don't think it's crazy to play Andy Sullivan this week.
2017 was in the winning Millionaire Maker lineup that had Spieth and Kuchar in it that year. So obviously has some Open Championship experience, no doubt about it. So for Herbert, I think it's Herbert because Bear is the other one, Benjamin, who's also in this tournament. This is Lucas Herbert. Okay, let me ask you a question about him really quickly. PGA Championship came in last, but put up 52 points, which ended up being like top 25. So given that, and then you look at the recent form at 6,800, would you rather play him, who's untested, or Keegan Bradley, who's certainly been tested and actually played well in Open Championships? It's something I was debating. I've been able to play them both in certain lineups, but I did have a one-off lineup. I was going back and forth between the two. I think I'm leaning recent form and would go Herbert, but even Bradley's playing decently well recently.
He is. Keegan's doing his thing. I think this is where you want to work backwards and try to anticipate, and it's very difficult, what exactly we're going to get. I don't think Keegan is built if this flirts with even par winners, because you know having those 6 to 10 footers for par are very difficult. Now, if he can lean on the ball striking and he can attack, I have no problem with that. And credit to Keegan, his short game has been a little better. His putter is still absolutely abysmal, but I think that's where you got to look. Matt Jones is there. He's another good win player. as an extreme sleeper, his form is really bad. But
also at 6,800, by the way, we haven't even talked to anybody else.
And then
as that works.
I'm contractually obligated to mention Griot.
Who's also
I would just say be careful, particularly if it's windy. I don't know if I do know this. His scrambling is not good enough to compete. He's going to need to do it all tee to green. It's a dangerous game, even at 6,700.
Yeah, at 6,800, I got a couple more guys before we get into our Curious George bombs, if you will. Richard Bland, 6,800. Cameron Tringale, 6,800. Now, Tringale has been nothing since PGA Championship, but Richard Bland held the lead at the U.S. Open for quite some time. Played well again last week and even 2 weeks ago at the Irish Open. So this guy's hard to pass up. I'm not going to lie to you.
I can't believe that we're talking. I would have said I was super happy to see him win. Thought he would be mentioned on a show ever. And this guy, credit to him, has just followed up that British Masters with several more impressive showings, in my opinion. And for him to be in the conversation at the US Open for a little was nuts. He is in play. It's crazy to say that, but that just speaks to the links golf and the Open in general. These are the type of guys that they're so crafty and they know what they're doing. Again, not saying to play them all, but if you wanted to play Richard Bland, I would not fault you at all.
So most of the guys that we've talked about here are going to be the bulk of our lineups. Now, don't get me wrong. In our last section, we'll talk about some Curious George bombs, which may make a couple of our lineups. Of course, the guys that we talked about, they're going to make up the most of it. If you want to know exactly who we're playing and what contest, well, Ben and I give that away, of course, in some of our articles. And of course, in our Pro Plays, which is a tool that you can use to find out our GPPs, how we rank them. And a great way to win an Osmo Plus Platinum Pass, get behind the curtain, if you will, is by reviewing one of our podcasts. So let me tell you about that. All you got to do is go to one of our shows, even this show, Ben. You can go on to your favorite podcast provider and watch it. You don't even have to look at our ugly faces. And here's what you're going to do. Sure. You're going to go listen to it. You're going to give us a 5-star review. Leave your Twitter handle or your Osmo username included, and you'll be eligible to win a month of Osmo Plus. Just like that, a winner is awarded every Friday, and your reviews are eligible for up to 1 year. This is a simple and easy step and one of the best ways you can go and win an Osmo Plus Platinum Pass. So go ahead and do that. Again, all of our content that you can find on YouTube will also be in your podcast network. So great way to do that. All right, let's move on to some Curious George bombs, Ben. I'm just, you know, taking a couple of the things and making it fun. A guy that I am curious about this week, you and I have talked about him a lot lately. Can Ches Reavy take his, say, Pebble Beach form and translate it here to Royal St. George's, or is the Open Championship going to be a little too much to ask for?
I definitely think it's possible for a guy like Ches. He's, as you always mention, a form golfer, and we've kind of identified that he's in form, and he's been playing pretty well. He's made 4 or 5 cuts. He's gained strokes on the approach in all 5. The problem is he loses strokes putting in 4 or 5, and I think that's going to be, like most, what you're going to need to do here. You're going to need to hole some putts. So he hasn't done anything in Opens. I think this is probably his best chance to do something, but at the same time, I don't know if I'm going to click much Ches Reavy in my lineups this week.
No, I don't think so either. I want to bring up 3 euros that I forgot to bring up, and chat just reminded me of them. Alex Noren, the Open Championship record, yes. I'm sure you've seen it. Incredibly good. He missed the cut last week. Not concerned about that. John Deere Classic, both you and I said, I don't think we like him this much. And the other one is a mini Brooks Koepka, but with a win at this event, and it's Francesco Molinari. The guy just gets up for a major championships. Ben, so Molinari, Alex Noren, and Danny Willett. Danny Willett, 2 top 10s, made 5 straight cuts at this event. So those 3 guys, maybe a little higher price than Reavy, of course. You like any of the 3?
I think Noren, really disappointed in what he did last week. I thought he was primed to just play well in a bad field at John Deere, and he did not. But you mentioned, I mean, Noren, when he was at the height of his powers, it was certainly in Europe and certainly in adverse, tough conditions. I like him. I think the price is fair. No problems with those other guys, but they're in a pool. And Chad's brought this up a couple times. It is so difficult to shrink your player pool this week. You could end,
really,
in theory, there's 120 guys that make sense in some regard. And that's just so hard. You have to be careful. So You want to make sure, and that's where I'm sure I can speak for you and Eric tomorrow. You guys are going to dive into the tee times and the groups and talk about some of the edges where maybe you pair some of these guys up in certain lineups because of that weather.
Yep, absolutely. It's definitely a big part of the Live Before Lock show. We go into kind of that. Obviously, a lot of the commentary has already been talked about, so that's how we differentiated between it. So stay tuned for that. We'll obviously have the most up-to-date weather projections as well. So a couple of other guys down here in this range. Matt Wallace, I saw, was just brought up in chat. But chat also brought up a couple of other guys that I like. Stuart Sink, a former Open Championship winner, clearly having the best season of his, you know, maybe of his career. Maybe not so much. He did win the Open, but he's having a great season nonetheless. 6,900. You can't dislike that play, Ben. And then the other one was, let me see. I saw it here. Not Sink. It was a little higher. Maybe it was Matt Wallace. Yeah, it was just Matt Wallace. So let's talk about Stuart Sink.
Yeah, I mean, Sink, you know, he's still gaining on with the irons on the approach. I worry a little that his putter has really regressed, and that could be problematic. I have no problem with the play. I think it's all about priorities, though. To me, I would rather play some of the other guys we've talked about in the same range, whether it's Lucas Herbert, Keegan, Andy Sullivan is a deep flyer. I'm even going to throw out, and chat, because I'm not on the show tomorrow, I got to get my hot takes out.
Yeah,
got it. I know this is bad. I think that EVR is in play. And this guy has burned me so many times, but no one is going to play him. And I think that if you want to embrace some serious risk, he is built to score. And I think he's the type of guy that could come in 37th, but he has the 12th most points on DraftKings, something like that. So I'm going to have some EVR in the pool pending. I believe it's all systems go in terms of he's in the field. Let's start with that.
I believe he is. I'm almost positive. There's no out symbol there. He has come in the top 20 of each of the last two opens. So I definitely get it. Just for that sheer fact, he's on my $10 millionaire maker pool right now. Problem is, when you get below 6,700, I'll be honest, there's not a lot of names that I want to play. That doesn't mean that I don't think they're going to make the cut. I do have some mentioned here. Jack Senior, he led the tournament last week for a while. He's not a guy that I think we've heard of at all much about. But there is Lucas Glover there coming off a win. He is a major champion. That's interesting there. Justin Harding, obviously a kind of, we call him the South African Spieth. We've called him a couple of times. Then there's, I don't know, Hao Tong Li. I mean, no, probably not, right? It gets really thin. Marcus Armitage. Is there anybody down here that you want to convince me to play?
I don't think you, it's all going to depend on how aggressive you are up top.
Yeah.
There are some names. I mean, certainly Sam Burns is going to be the guy that most people are going to gravitate towards. Troy Merritt probably as well. I'm not in love with either of the plays, to be honest. I think they make sense because they're underpriced, but I don't think they're more likely to make the cut than some of these other guys. So I don't have a ton. Dean Burmeister is 61. I think that's a little thin, but at 61, I think he's a better player than that.
Yeah, let's spend a minute on Burns. Let me ask you about him. We haven't seen him play links golf much at all. We haven't seen him play top form like he's, you know, done recently, obviously, but struggled in majors, withdrew from the PGA Championship because he said his back hurt, whatever. US Open wasn't even close, but did play well at the Scottish last week. And at 6,300, if you're going Rahm McIlroy, is he a must? Or do you think you can still fill out a quality team given that you only have about 6,950 left per player?
So the problem is, let me ask you this as we bouncing out of here in a couple minutes. Rahm and McIlroy, what do you think the correlation between them and Sam Burns of teams that play those two will have Burns? I honestly think it'll be over 50% of those teams.
It has to be. Just looking at the way salary breaks out, given that you only have 6,950 per player, I don't think people are going to want to put four below seven in the lineup. So I think they're going to be forced down to Sam Burns.
And that's what concerns me a little is you're not getting, I almost would rather play Sam Burns in different builds where I like really pepper the 9K range and then I flat with him at the bottom.
Yep.
Because I think if you jam the top two, you're going to play Sam Burns and then you're going to fill out guys in the lower sevens. Everybody's going to do that. And you don't create
even
any
Koepka
leverage.
Too. Yeah. Even Koepka too. Yes. It only changes it by $200 from Rory, 400 from, or 600 from Rahm. It doesn't change it enough. I totally agree. I think you're going to see a lot of those builds. come that way. So go ahead. Why don't you send us out? We get the Olympics next week. We get the Barbersol this week, but crazy.
So last question before we leave, Match says that, what do you think could be the stroke difference between a windy and non-windy wave? So one thing I do want to point out, there's not really waves. They just tee off.
Tee off. Correct.
And then they just tee off forever, every 15 minutes.
First hole. Yep.
I do think though, it could be, you know, over a couple strokes easily, but it's just, you're not targeting waves per se. You're targeting little regions within the tee times. And that's what makes it so difficult. So I think you want to be cognizant of it, but at the same time, it's a roll of the dice. You hope that you bat your guys and that they don't get the worst of it, because a couple groups will really catch a raw deal.
Yeah. And to be, you know, to go just a little bit further into that, the first 2 days at the Open Championship, more so than any other tournament we play all year, any major, any regular tournament, it is so luck oriented, trying to pick out the hour, the 2 hours that'll have the best conditions of the first 2 days. That's obviously how to get the 6 of 6 through, and it can flip on a dime. I was telling Ben, the 2017 year, Justin Thomas was third after day one, missed the cut after day two. So much can happen at this tournament with the wind elements. It just doesn't happen anywhere else. So, it makes it the lure all the much more fun. Plus overnight viewing, get your Peacock subscriptions ready. You'll see all of the tournament on that. But Ben, next week we do have the Olympics, a 60-man field. It'll be fun to break that down. But good luck this week, everybody, at the Open Championship, or the British Open, I should say, whichever you go by. And, of course, join Eric Lindquist and I tomorrow night. We're going to break it all down on a Live Before Lock show. So until then, everybody, good luck, and we'll see you on the other side. Cheers.